My name is Wayne Thunder, and you are listening to Rampage on the Airwaves, the History of Local Music, Part 3.
Inside of you. If I could only know just what will I do.
Vacant Affair, actually, in the rise to popularity, was phenomenal because about 2 years ago, nobody knew who they were. And, you know, they were just starting out. They came in at the right time because emo music was getting really big in Singapore. And I remember the first time I ever heard of A Vacant Affair. I mean, they were just forming, and Joshua, who's the guitarist of A Vacant Affair, used to be a big fan of Electrico. So whenever Electrico was recording, you know, in the studio, he would come by and, he would hang out with Dan. And Dan would give him tips on guitars and, you know, he would chill out here. And then all of a sudden, one day he just said, "Hey, Leonard, can you record my band?" Yeah. And I said, "What's your band's name?" And he said, "We don't know yet, but it's just a group of friends that got together."
Yeah.
Then I said, "Okay, are you all going to write some songs, you know, then come and see me?" And then Joshua said, we're not very good yet, lah. Just give us maybe a little more time to practice and all that.
Yeah.
And a couple of months later, he called me again and he said the band wanted to come meet me. They were very, very enthusiastic about recording, very enthusiastic about being in a band, and because they wanted to play Bay Beats.
So says Mr. Leonard Suse, who, if you need any reminding, is Singapore's undisputed number one independent local music producer. For the last three shows, Leonard has been providing us with so many stories and his opinion also on the local music scene. And as usual, he has handpicked the bands that we're going to be playing for you today. And that brings us to the next story, which covers the Bay Beats Music Festival and the main organizers, Awakening Productions, together with Wake Me Up Music. The Bay Beats Music Festival, as you know, is probably Singapore's biggest local music festival. It brings in about 70,000 to 80,000 people every year, and they also bring in overseas bands from as far as Asia and America, Europe, Australia, and so on and so on. It's definitely become one of the key dates in the calendar of local Singapore music, that's for sure.
They are one of the biggest platforms through which bands can actually showcase their stuff and get recognized and noticed and then move on from there.
Yeah, and because they managed to make Bay Beats a successful local music event, sort of inspired other groups to...
Yeah, it really did, because I've seen the whole history of it. I mean, I've recorded a lot of bands who come here and they say they want to record something because they want to play Bay Beats.
Yeah.
You know, and that was their only motivation, to play Bay Beats, you know. And a lot of these bands actually come up to those ranks, but it's all because of Bay Beats and Wake Me Up and Awakening Productions and what they're doing for the local music scene.
As far as I'm aware, Wake Me Up and Awakening are actually run by the same people. The only difference being that Wake Me Up is the music, recording, distribution and retail end of the business, whereas Awakening is more catering to the events side of things. I asked Leonard to give us more details on the organization, and that also leads us into the next track and the story behind the band.
Wake Me Up is basically John Cheong and Glenn. It's a big family of bands, and they're all linked together by religion, by Christianity. I've worked with a lot of Christian bands before also, and it was funny because at that time when I was recording in Pai Tee, I didn't say this in the last episode, at the time I was recording in Pai Tee, I was also recording Pension State. At the same time, you know, sometimes even the same day. And I had to make sure that these two bands never met in the studio, because, you know, I would probably take Pension State during the day and then in Pai Tee during the night. That was after going to church and coming back, or after going to the hospital to see my dad and then coming back. That was my first experience with a Christian band. And then slowly, you know, like after the success of Pension State, more Christian bands started coming. And then eventually Surreal was one of the bands that recorded also. And Surreal is made up of John Cheong and Glenn and Marcus, and you know, it's all the main people in the Wake Me Up organization. The whole entire Surreal recording, right, took many, many years, because, you know, like the members started coming back and redoing parts, and then after everything was done, then we realized that one of the guitars throughout the whole recording was out of tune.
Yeah.
So we had to redo all the guitar tracks that the guitarist played. It turned out for the better, because I mean it became much tighter and, you know, it sounded really good.
Now I've been waiting.
Surreal with the proposal song. And that leads us very nicely to Plain Sunsets, one of the Wake Me Up label's most prominent bands. They've been around and they've made albums on and off for the last maybe 10 years or so, so they are definitely a very important part of our Singapore local music scene. Leonard produced their 2003 album The Gift, which contained very popular songs like Photos of Us and Girl on the Queen Street, a track which, if you remember from a couple of episodes ago, we were meant to play, but couldn't get the track in time. But we will play that track for you after Leonard's done telling his stories about Plain Sunset.
Plain Sunset, whenever they played, they had a huge, huge following. And all these kids that were following them were not necessarily Plain Sunset fans, but they were more like skinheads and punks that go to these shows because they want to create trouble.
This was when they were still younger and doing like heavier, faster stuff.
So when Plain Sunset first started out, they were playing like more punky stuff, more punk music. And this is not the Simple Plan kind of punk, but more like the old school Ramones style punk and all that. At a lot of these gigs that I went to, you had two different sections of the crowd. One section was the skinheads, one section was the punks. And the skinheads and the punks couldn't get along. So whenever Plain Sunset took the stage, they started playing, these two groups, would clash in the middle of the stage. They would start moshing, they start throwing punches at each other and start fighting.
Dustbins will start flying.
Yeah, and then, Plain Sunset gigs, will end up in fights, in big fights. And it made it a bit difficult to have Plain Sunset play at a lot of the more important gigs. Because, wherever they went, trouble always followed. And slowly, you could tell that they started toning down the music and then it started becoming more melodic and more,
emotional
and more mainstream.
Plain Sunset with Girl on Queen Street. I'm quite happy that we finally managed to track down that song for you. Up next is a band that we have played on the show before. In fact, we dedicated an entire show to them. But that does indicate how important they are to our Singapore local music scene. None other than West Grand Boulevard. They made a big splash earlier this year with the release of their debut album, Waiting For You, an album which was also recorded by Leonard Susay.
Well, West Grand Boulevard, one of my favourite bands also. I mean, every band is like one of my favourite bands, but West Grand Boulevard somehow, you know, they're very dear to me. That's because of their members. I mean, all the members are really super duper nice. When I first met West Grand Boulevard, they were the old West Grand Boulevard. That means Brian was singing with them. And I remember when, you know, when they came here to record and all that, and whenever Brian came here, like, a lot of these girls would call me and say, is West Grand recording today? Is West Grand recording today? You know, can I come? Can I come? And they'll all come here and just, you know, just look at Brian and try to flirt with him, And, you know, Brian didn't seem to care because Brian actually had a major, major crush on one of my friends, which I will not mention on this show because then, you know, it will really embarrass him and Amanda Ling.
Oh, I see.
So I will not mention Amanda Ling's name,
Oh, okay.
Sorry, Brian.
Leonard's an easy man to crack.
Okay, there was this incident. This was after the Lime Sonic Bang, and then Electrico played, and you know, the whole West Grand Boulevard were there to support Electrico, and especially Brian. And after the gig, I was hanging out with Desmond and Amanda. We were standing outside Cine Leisure, and then Brian came, and then he started tugging at my sleeve. So I said, okay, Brian. Then I turned to Amanda and I said, Amanda, meet Brian. He's the singer from West Grand. And then she turns and she says, hello. And then he goes like, I really like your keys. And then his knees buckled. And then he was embarrassed. And then she just like smiled at him. And then you know, she left with Desmond. And then Brian was like, oh my God, she spoke to me. It was damn funny. I had really, really high hopes for West Grand because, you know, they were the band that I thought had the biggest potential and the brightest future because they were smart, knew what they wanted, they had the potential, they had really great songs. I was shocked when they told me John was only 15 at that time, actually 14 years old when he started recording because I couldn't believe that someone so young could play so well. The only other drummer that I met who had the same potential was Matt from Puck Jelly because he was 13 years old when he started playing, you know, started recording.
Besides being obviously talented musicians, West Grand Boulevard were one of the first few Singapore bands to successfully promote themselves online without playing many live shows.
They were very forward thinking, you know, they weren't just content to be playing small gigs, small shows, and then, you know, like, in fact, that was how I first heard of West Grand also, because they told me they had a MySpace account, so I went to check out MySpace account, and I saw at that time they had like 2,000 over listened.
However, halfway through the recording of Waiting For You, Brian left the band and he was replaced with Singapore Idol finalist Daphne Koo, a decision that drew mixed reactions from the band's rapidly growing fan base.
There were all these girls that came to see Brian that were very against Daphne joining the band. Then if you go and search like on the internet, right, you go and look through people's blogs and all that, right, you know, they have all these "I don't want Daphne to replace Brian," you know, blogs. But, you know, Daphne is really talented, and if you listen to the album, a lot of the songs have her imprint, her character, because the newer songs that West Grand did were all written with Daphne, and somehow the music changed a bit because it was more mainstream, it was more acceptable, you know, it was more catchy.
I think regardless of whether you prefer Brian or Daphne, the one thing that you probably can't argue with is that West Grand Boulevard are an important Singapore band, not just for what they've achieved, but also in the very modern way that they've gone about it. That brings me to a topic that Leonard and I had a very good chat about, and that is the mentality of a lot of independent Singapore bands towards promoting themselves and their live shows. I was talking to Rampage the other day, and he was just telling me, I received this press kit from this band in like States, and I received that press kit in some other band in like the UK or whatever. Like that. And then I asked him, how many press kits have you received from local bands? And he said, zero, nothing. Never received anything whatsoever from a local band. That to me is really, really disgusting. Like, if a local band wants to, you know, do well, is serious about what they're doing, and they want to put their music out there and promote themselves, why are they not sending press kits to people? You know what I mean? If Rampage can get a press kit from an obscure band as far away as some country town in the States right now, why are Singapore bands not doing this?
I think Singapore bands are a bit spoiled as well. I mean, they don't really go out and work for the music or work for the band. Mm. You know, bands are in Singapore are just there to play and, you know, like to have fun and all that lah. I mean, all these press kits sent by overseas bands, I mean, these bands are trying to actually break out into different markets and all that.
Yeah.
And I'm sure there are a lot of Singapore bands also who send press kits to, you know, overseas labels, to overseas concert promoters and all that.
What is the most important thing you think local bands should be doing but are not doing?
I think what local bands should be doing should be focusing more on trying to promote themselves and the music.
Yeah.
You know, because most of these bands are not doing anything about promoting themselves or the music. Yeah. You know, they just sit back and then wait for the next gig. There are so many avenues. There's MySpace, there's the internet. You know, get in touch with foreign labels, get in touch with other bands from different countries. You know, try and arrange something whereby you could bring them here and then they could bring you to that country. You know, just work together as musicians, as artists lah. I mean,
what about the simple task of getting people to come to your gigs? Do you think the bands here are active enough in actually getting people to come see the shows?
No, because okay, most of the gigs, right, that are held in Singapore, right, are all sponsored events.
Mm.
There are very few bands that actually go out there and organize gigs for themselves, and then they invite bands to play, and then, you know, they do the marketing and promotion. And all these event organizers, they don't feel the need to go out there and, you know, promote the whole event to get everyone excited about it.
Yeah.
You know, so the bands think that, oh, okay, I'm going to be playing at this event, so I'll just show up on that day and I'll play, and then, you know, I'll get paid a bit of money and then I'll leave.
Yeah.
You see, but the bands are not going out there and saying like, okay, I'm going to be playing at this event, all of you better come, and then send out like mass email and stuff like that.
That's a very, very big chunk of, that's a very big chunk of the process of how a band becomes popular. Because
yeah, it's gone, because most bands take it for granted.
Yeah, because most bands in like other countries like the States, the UK, Australia or whatever, they have to sort of cut their teeth on that whole entire process of playing these small shows at small venues, and they're forced to sort of really, really promote themselves. Every single person counts type of attitude, where they're trying to get people to come to see their shows, because the simple fact is, if you don't get enough people to come and see you, a venue is not going to call you back because no one bothered to come and see you, and that just shows that you didn't bother to promote yourself. That whole entire process seems to be missing here.
The biggest gripe I have about Singaporean bands is that a lot of them are very spoiled. I mean, you go to a gig and everything is there for you.
Yeah.
You know, your drum set, amps and everything, your microphones, you know.
To the point where you even just show up at a gig hoping that people will turn up.
Yeah, hoping that people will turn up, and then you just play and then you leave. I was on tour with Electrico and we had to carry all the stuff, and it was like shell shock lah, because we didn't know this was going to happen, and you know, we had to bring our own drum set, our own amps and everything. You show up at a gig, nothing is set up for you. All the microphones are just chucked on the floor. You know, and the previous band actually just chucked everything and then left, you know, cleared the stage. And then you are supposed to set up. You're given like 15 minutes to set up.
Yeah.
You know, mic everything yourself.
Yeah.
You know, not even do a sound check and then just go straight into, you know, your set.
Yeah.
And that is how it actually should be in Singapore, because then, you know, bands will learn, bands will know how to get their own sound, will know how to control them, how they play and all that. Whereas in Singapore, you know, everything is done for you, and you know, bands just show up, play, and then complain that the sound was bad.
The argument that I get from most people is that, oh, it's just a hobby, we're doing this for fun. But I guess the message that I'm trying to get across to people is that even if you're remotely interested in making a contribution to Singapore's young and developing music scene, treat your music with the same respect and dedication that you would most other hobbies. So if you're like an amateur photographer, you want to get the best camera you can afford, you want to take the best pictures you can take. If you're an amateur model, you always want to look, you know, your best wherever you go and so on. And if you're actually getting paid, that takes you out from the realm of it being a hobby altogether, because people then are either, you know, parting with their hard-earned money to see you play or to have you play the event or whatever. So you then have to respect their investment as well as your own. And if we all realize that, I think we can all look forward to a much more healthy and supportive Singapore music scene. Okay, that's a wrap for part 3 of the history of local music on Rampage on the Airwaves. My name is Wayne Thunder. Thanks once again to Mr. Leonard Susay for his entertaining stories and his opinion. You know, in the course of doing this series, we sort of realized that 3 parts is not enough. So we're actually going to be coming back with a very, very big part 4 to close off the series with a bang. But actually, on the next show, I will be very happy to welcome back Little Rampage, who will be done with his O-levels. And I know he's been really itching to get back behind the microphone, so we're all looking forward to that as well. Lastly, before I go, I want to invite everyone to Dubwise at Coco Latte this Saturday, 18th of November. I will be spinning some reggae, rock and ska tunes together with J-Boss from The Suns, who is bringing down his foundation, which includes his MC and a bongo player. So I can guarantee you it's going to be a whole lot of fun. Coco Latte is at 79 Robertson Quay, where the Gallery Hotel is, and it's free as well. So I hope to see lots of you listeners out there. But for now, I will leave you with Flights of Fancy by West Grand Boulevard, and this is the version that was sung by Brian. So enjoy, and see you next episode. Bye-bye.